Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Sports Community Radio with your hosts, Steve Pallas and Jonah Vella, bringing you the best in grassroots sports information every week. G'day, Steve, and welcome to you, mate.
G'day, Joe. It's great to be on the show, and it's great to be back in Melbourne.
Yeah, absolutely. And as per usual, we've got a stellar lineup of guests and content for you guys out there, all around what your club can do to be successful. So hopefully you stay tuned with us here on RPPFM. And as you mentioned, Steve, you're back in the moderate climes of Melbourne.
Yeah, I was being sarcastic.
It is absolutely freezing here in Victoria. And meanwhile, where have you? You've been sauntering off at the top end of the country in 30 degrees plus. So tell us, mate, let us live vicariously through your exploits over the last week.
Yeah, okay, because it was very pleasurable, Joe. We had the pleasure, because you had to stay in Melbourne, of going back up and working with Northern Territory Sport and Rec. And let me just put on the table straight away that I got onto the plane and it was about 11 degrees, and I got off the plane and it was 33. So straight away I was overdressed. We had a really interesting assignment in the Northern Territory. We did two or three sessions in Palmerston, which is one of the fastest growing regions of not only Darwin but of Australia. But before that, we went and flew across to Gove in the Arnhem Land, East Arnhem Land, and right on the Arafura Sea, Joe, which is a really interesting town, because they've got somewhere in the order of 6,000 or 7,000 people at the moment. But what's happening there, and predominantly supported by mining and a smelter, and Rio Tinto is pulling out of the town, or closing one of the smelter or the refinery, I think it is, so therefore a large number of people, which they're not entirely sure, but you know, in the order of 40, 50, 60% of their population will be leaving the town in the next 4 or 5 months. So the sports clubs were really, really worried about the fact that they might be put at risk and at jeopardy. So part of our job was to go up there and talk to the sports clubs and look at moving forward. And even though it's not ideal, Joe, that so many people are leaving town, what it does do is it creates this amazingly unique situation where sports clubs have that opportunity to effectively redesign the culture that they want and re-engage in the community. And the sports clubs have this tremendous opportunity to fill the void that's clearly kind of existing in the town as people are a little bit unsure about who's going to be there and who's not going to be there. And as we said in the training session, sport has the ability to bring the community together. And it's one of, in our terminology, Joe, it's one of the three pillars of community in one regard. Like there's local schools and there's obviously the church. But then apart from those two institutions, nothing else brings the community together like sport. And so I think in Gove's situation, sport has that tremendous role to play. So we received, it was fantastic. The training sessions were small, but there was really, really really interesting discussions about what was happening, particularly with Gove, and how clubs can move forward. So yeah, hopefully the opportunity arises that we get to go back and work a lot more closely with the clubs of Gove over the next period of time, and particularly help lend our expertise to helping them with that transition through. So that was really, really, really interesting. That was you know, very unique sort of situation for us.
What kind of sports do they play in Gove?
There's effectively 53 different community groups, so including the recreational, dance, and rotary, and those sorts of recreational and community organisations. But it's the traditional, plus the fishing, the tennis, the bowls. There's three.
So traditional as in Aussie rules, tennis.
Aussie rules, tennis. Rugby league,
netball, basketball.
Those sorts. And then obviously, not obviously, but for us Southerners, then there's those sports that that are very prevalent in the Northern Territory, but not we don't have such access to, like the fishing, the motorsports, the speedway.
BMX.
I didn't see BMX. I'm sure it is. I'm sure it is, but certainly, yeah, pretty much the full diversity of sports. So, which really surprised me, I must admit, but 7,000 is a large a large population to support those. So the question's going to be, what clubs, what sports remain after those people? And there's no real reason why they all can't survive, prosper and flourish. In the way that they run themselves may be different. And so they're looking at different sorts of models and options, like getting a centralised administration service potentially in clubs use that, and a couple of other different unique models, which will be really, really interesting to whether we're a part of or not, to watch, to see how that unfolds.
So Gove's an island.
No, it's the tip, right tip of the East Arnhem Land Peninsula.
Okay, so the tip of the peninsula, and there is a lot of islands around that area. Do they all have? Do they interact in terms of sporting environment?
Look, I was only there for 2 or 3 days. And I think what might happen, and it's more rather than the islands, it's more the remote communities coming into town.
Right.
But still very early for us to understand
the whole dynamics
of it. Yeah, how it does work up in Gove, because obviously the remote communities and the Aboriginal communities, they're not going to change, or they're going to change marginally. So they certainly be still looking to participate in the sporting activities that they've always done.
Mm-hmm.
And even the day before we got there, which was a little bit unfortunate, and I had a chat to Benita, who hosts us most times, about kind of liaising much better with
Benita
what's going
Bittner.
On. Yeah, superstar. But the day before we flew in, there was a whole of community concert.
So Benita's she's the manager of
Club Development in Central Australia, but I think it's her title. But she seems to have got all of the Northern Territory club development work, which is fantastic because she's passionate about clubs and probably even more importantly,
working for the NT government.
She is Sport and Rec Racing.
Yep.
But she's passionate about the volunteer and helping the volunteer, and understands uniquely the challenges of the volunteer. But she's also, Joe, I was just looking at our training register this morning. She's sat in on 21 different sports community training sessions. So
wow.
I did speak to her over the trip about maybe she might want to think about presenting them, because she won't be as bored as sitting there.
Well, I just she works for the government, and the NT government, as we've mentioned. So it just goes to show that the sports community training, the content that's within the training is accepted as being of the level and standard required to actually empower the volunteers in the Northern Territory, which is a real plus for us, I think.
Oh, look, Joe, I coming back into Darwin and doing the Palmerston session, I haven't told you this story, actually, but there was a lady that was in, you'll remember her from our last trip in April. She was... she is involved with Palmerston basketball. And in the previous training session, she had told us a story about, it was a strategic planning session, and she told us, we only have one objective, and that is to maximise the number of kids. And she came into the session and said, well, we've now reached capacity. And then she came to 2 or 3 sessions, and she came back to these sessions, so what are we in now, July? So 4 months later, and she said, I listened to myself speak in those sessions that we're at, and I thought, how ridiculous is it that we're turning kids away? So in that 4 month period, Joe, she's facilitated starting another Palmerston Basketball Association as a direct result of coming to the training, and that's good about the training, but it's one of the great things about people working together and seeing what's possible and being inspired off each other and. Mm. And that I've got to say, Joe, that made me feel really, really proud as it did. And I just finally, while I keep remembering fondly what it was like to be in 32-degree heat and then got a rude shock flying through a very massive 80-kilometre-an-hour storm coming back into Melbourne. But I had the pleasure of sitting down with Benita and having a look at the online training that you'd developed. And I must say I was very proud of the training session, which is very, very imminent in being released on the sports community website.
Yes, we're all looking forward to that. And it has taken us a while to produce it, just because we want to produce the best possible product for the clubs out there, so we can help them as much as we can achieve their club objectives. So we're very excited, as Steve mentioned, the release of that online training is imminent. And what that will mean is that for a lot of the clubs out there who might not be able to make it to in-class training, this is an opportune way to improve the skills of your volunteers by getting them to sit down in front of a computer and go through the courses that we provide for them. So just another way that we help empower the volunteers of grassroots sports clubs, which is what we're all about.
It is, and I guess the something else that's very imminent is our first full-length ebook, Joe. We've just signed off all the graphics and the font and the heading colours and,
yes,
the, and that's and all the words are written, so it's all with the graphic designer, and we're hoping that certainly in the next 2 weeks that the book will be ready to be, go online. And the first book that we have written is something about, we haven't quite got the working title yet, that'll be the last thing we work out, but Achieving Your Club Goals Using Social Media and Communication Strategies.
Yeah, very exciting. All right, so welcome back, Steve, to the Mediterranean climes of Melbourne, in which we're experiencing 1 degree mornings, and I'm sure you're absolutely thrilled about all of that. So the next little bit of the show will certainly warm you up, so stay tuned. And we'll be back with more shortly on RPPFM. You're listening to Sports Community Radio with your hosts, Steve Pellis and Joe Novella, another Sports Community digital production, courtesy of www.sportscommunity.com.au. Okay, welcome back to Sports Community Radio here with Joe and Steve. We've got another fantastic guest for our show today. Her name is Julia Quinn. She's the Director of Media and Community Relations at AMP. Julia, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Joe and Steve, and thanks for having me.
Oh, no. Thank you very much for sparing a couple of minutes to talk to our clubs and volunteers. Now, one of the things, the number one thing that on our website that that the clubs and volunteers go to is sponsorship and grants. And AMP has just launched, or coming towards the end of an opening of a significant grant, AMP's Tomorrow Fund. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
AMP has launched a new program of activity this year called AMP's Tomorrow Fund. It's offering $1 million in grants to passionate individuals of all ages and walks of life who have a dream and are on their way to achieving it. And that's certainly the people that work in both clubs and obviously aspiring athletes.
Fantastic. Absolutely. There's nothing. There's one word that describes both on and off the field, the pool, the court, the arena is in sport, is passion. So how do you, from a decision-making process, how do you define passion? Like, what are you actually looking for?
It's not just the talent and achievement that people have, but it's also that they've got the drive to go after it, so that people have really thought about the difference that they can make in their community and what they as an individual can do to effectively the catalyst to actually make it happen. So we actually often talk about in our campaign of activity about we're looking for the tomorrow makers, so people who have an idea about the future and what can really make a difference in their sport or their hobby or even, frankly, in their own lives. And they're the people we're looking for.
So when they're framing, they're the people that they're in sports for sure. So when they're framing their application, it won't be just about what the passion is, but what they're trying to get to and what they're trying to achieve and defining that goal. Is that?
Absolutely, absolutely. So in terms of, we want people to actually demonstrate that they have the drive to realise that dream. And so what's really important that people think really clearly about what their goal is and then outline the steps that they're going to take to get there. So, and often it's a good idea to test this with a couple of people who don't necessarily know too much about the goal that you're sort of going for, and that would actually help you test it, whether or not you've explained it well enough in the application. So, I mean, obviously we are looking for people who are real doers, people who have already worked hard, trained hard, and put a lot of effort into their project or ambition, and taking the time to actually list the steps that they've already taken to get to the level that they're at is a good way of showing that.
Yeah, okay. And so what are the size grants that you're offering or making available to the successful passionate
people?
We are
offering grants from between $10,000 to $100,000, which will be awarded across a wide range of activities, anything from training costs, travel costs, research, living expenses, small, even a small business funding type scenario. It could be domestic, it could be attending a competition in another part of the world. It honestly could be so many different things. And we've already seen applications from, you know, sort of talented young people like a young cricketer who's currently on a young Aussie representative side, but he's looking to get more experience and potentially fund his travels and participation in different types of training, through to documentary makers, talented artists, even a couple of app developers in the techie world. So honestly, it's a very broad, you know, sort of program, and you know, the young athletes of the future are just one aspect of the type of people we're trying to engage.
Well, I can just hear my our audience reaching for their computers now. So, how while we're talking, how where can they find out information? We obviously Sports Community has got a lot of information about AMP's Tomorrow Fund on our website from www.sportscommunity.com.au, and click on the Grants tab and there it is front and centre. But if they want to go directly, and where do they apply and where do they get a lot more information?
The website's the best. So that's AMPstomorrowfund.com.au and AMPS and then tomorrowfund.com.au, but obviously following the link on your website's another one. It's also on the AMP's Facebook page. There's links to from there as well, in case you forget the exact spelling of the website.
Yes. Now, there's not that much time left to put your application together. When does the grant shut?
We are open online until the 31st of August, and so we've only got a matter of weeks to go. We've had lots and lots of registrations, but lots of people have not necessarily submitted those yet. So if someone who's listening has started their application, we recommend that they really get going and start filling it in, because there are a few steps. And also, you don't want to be caught up into that crush of the last couple of hours or couple of days.
Yeah.
When, you know, you never know what happens. The net goes down, or you have a slow connection, and you could be panicking, because unfortunately it will be turned off from there until next year.
So that's the thought from AMP, to have this as an annual type grant?
Absolutely. So in 2014, we've got $1 million to give away, and that comes from the AMP Foundation. The AMP Foundation supports a whole lot of community works around the country. We are certainly, this is just the first year, and are looking to obviously continue through to years coming up, and who knows what the dollar amount will be then.
Wow. And the response from the community to the fund, how has that been received?
Absolutely phenomenal. As I mentioned, we have actually received many thousand registrations already, and then sort of a portion of those have actually turned into submitted applications. We do have, you know, just over 2 weeks to go, and we are already sort of feeling the weight of all the quality applications we've received. Some really amazing ideas and some really amazing people out there in the Australian community.
Wow. What about the process itself? What do I do? Do I go onto the website and...
Yeah, so it's an online application.
Yes.
It is quite simple, although it's worth remembering that some of the responses do have a word limit, and you are sort of... It's a good idea to really think through what you're doing. So you can actually have a look at the application process and actually save and come back to elements of it, because often people want to go away and do a bit of research, particularly when they're putting their budget together and how much money that they would like to apply for. But we suggest you really get onto it sooner rather than later, because there's little things like we'd like some people to submit a referee,
yes,
just to endorse their talent and their ideas. And also, it's really worthwhile to be very realistic with the budget that you're applying for, because, you know, obviously we would like to spread this money as far and wide as we possibly can.
Yeah, absolutely. And what do you hope is the outcome of offering the grant?
Oh, look, to be really frank, it's actually about every Australian having the opportunity to own their own tomorrow. So not only the personal achievement, but making a difference for their community around them.
Wow.
And I think, you know, that can only be a fantastic thing for everyone.
So then that takes it, one of the things we talk about in our training is making your objectives measurable and quantifiable and answered in a yes or no question.
Yes.
So how on earth are you going to make, what's the decision-making process going to be like?
We have some layers of judging, the first round is actually against the criteria that's clearly articulated on the website of what we're looking for, and then the next round we have is actually AMP employees. There's a group of them who are going to be the judges. I think at the moment it's in the order of over 50 people.
Wow.
And then we have a panel of experts once we get to a shorter list. And then the final decision will be made by that panel of experts along with our CEO, Craig Miller. We figured that it was a substantial amount of money and maybe the CEO needed to put his rubber stamp on it.
Yeah, absolutely. But so it sounds like that you've actually engaged the whole workforce of AMP almost to be part of this, the whole process.
Absolutely. So not only AMP's direct employees, but also we have over 3,600 advisors who are aligned to AMP. They run their own small businesses all throughout Australia, and they are also very active in seeking out the tomorrow makers who can enter this program and are very excited about seeing the sorts of people we find and support.
Yeah, I can imagine that would be just a tremendously inspiring process as you start to kind of get into the those that have gone through the application process.
Absolutely.
Properly.
Well, we're really looking forward to talking about not only the winners of this grant, but also updating everyone on the progress in 6, 12 and 18 months' time.
Yeah, that will be. And how do you plan to do that?
Look, the AMP's tomorrowfund.com.au website will actually be live all year round. And obviously we're in the sort of recruitment phase, for want of a better description, in terms of finding people to apply for the grant. But we will also give updates in terms of what the finalists look like, what the winners look like, and actually profiling some of their stories. We also are quite active on social media, both Twitter and Facebook, and some stories and updates are coming through both those ways as well.
So do you have your Twitter handle off the top of your head by any chance, or is it, we can find that on the website and we'll put that in the show notes? Or
it's AMP Foundation, at AMP Foundation is the Twitter handle, and the Facebook is the AMP Facebook page, so it's just straight out.
Straight out of the AMP, yep. Facebook. They're easy to find by searching AMP on Facebook.
They are pretty easy to find, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And where do you see it going? Do you think it'll be in the same form, given the huge response from both the staff and the advisor network? And I come from back in the old days, ex-National Mutual myself, so I understand the...
Yes, well, we
Oh, you own them now.
Yeah, we do. We merged with AXA a couple of years ago, which is formerly had National Mutual as part of it. So
it shows my age, actually.
That's okay. I think everything changes over time.
Yeah, it does. So what scope do you think
what do we think we'll look like in the future?
Yeah.
Tell you the truth. So this is a very similar program that we have basically adopted from our cousins in New Zealand, has been running for a couple of years now. It's sort of our program is a little bit broader, particularly our positioning about finding tomorrow makers is a little bit different from the New Zealand one. In terms of future years, obviously we will see what works really well and what also gets a lot of endorsement and engagement in future years. I mean, we would like to come up with a people's choice in future.
Yes.
In terms of the judging process, we just felt until the program really got going that that was probably a little bit challenging in the first year.
Yes.
And then in terms of the actual fund and how much we are going to contribute each year, that'll come down to the good performance of the AMP Foundation.
Yes.
And how much return on the capital we have on that. Considering that's quite central to our business, we think we can keep that up, and if not, if better not actually grow it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So we do manage our money well.
Well, you're an institution, and I say this with any flippancy at all, AMP is an institution in Australia, and one of the pillars of our community. So it's fantastic that you're actually looking towards tomorrow and helping those that so often, whether it's inside or outside sport, but people with a vision. And we know those people. We are, in one regard, we are those people. Being a sports community was just a start-up 2 years ago. So we know the challenges and still live those challenges,
true,
to be honest.
I mean, and this is sort of essentially could be seed funding for, sort of someone sort of coming up with a new idea, such as the idea that you guys came up with 2 years ago.
Yeah, and that's how we saw it, and really, really exciting for the club. So it'd be fantastic if you could let us know once you go through the judging, how people have gone, and we can get that message out and continue to get it out to our audience. And
Joe and Steve, I'd love to do that. We'd be very happy to share that information with you. And also, obviously, to share... sort of introduce you to some of our finalists who particularly come from the sports community.
Yeah, and get them to tell their stories.
Yeah.
I mean, absolutely, and if we can help them, that would be fantastic. Julia, I know you're so busy, so we thank you so much for sparing 15 minutes of your time with us. And good luck, and more than good luck, thank you for creating something of such a wonderful opportunity for the volunteers.
No problem, we're very excited to share it.
Brilliant. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
See ya.
Bye.
Bye.
You're listening to Sports Community Radio with your hosts, Joe Novella and Steve Pallas. If you've missed a couple of our episodes, why not visit our website at www.sportscommunity.com.au, and there you'll find all our previous podcasts that you can download. And while you're there, give us a review so you can help spread the news about Sports Community and its services to the grassroots sports clubs. Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Joe Novella on Sports Community Radio here on RPPFM, the voice of the peninsula. It's time to talk top nines, where we talk about top nine tips that you can use at your sports club for a number of different challenges that you may face at your club, whether it be around social media or generating funds through sponsorship or fundraising. We use this section to give you general tips on how to make your life easier at your sports club. And today, I'm going to be talking about the top nine mistakes top nine mistakes made with club websites. Because we all have club websites, and the question is, do we utilize them properly? Okay, so the first mistake... And of course, by telling you all about the mistakes, I'm hoping that you do the opposite and that there's the learning. The first mistake is that we don't understand the terminology. Basically, with club websites, there are two really important things that you need to understand as a club. That the concept of the domain name and the concept of hosting. So there are two separate aspects to websites. The domain name is basically the address of your website. So whether it be www.morningtonfc.com.au or www.frankstonnetball.com.au, that is your domain name. So it's like your street address for your home. And domain names usually range between $10 and $20 for the year. You shouldn't have to pay any more than that for a particular domain name. Now, once you've got a domain name, which is your address, your club's address on the internet, you need to put a house on the address. And that's where hosting comes in. So you want to put all the information about your club into a place. It's the same concept with real estate. So you have an address, but then you need to build a house to put all your belongings in. On the internet world, you have an address, which is your domain name, and then you need a house to put all the club information into, which is your hosting package. So hosting all your information generally costs or shouldn't cost more than $40 to $50 per year. So if you're charged more than that, then I would definitely have a strong look at trying to get a cheaper hosting package. Now, the other cost that might come into play is if you're getting a third party to design your website for you. And once again, the costs can range extraordinarily. People could charge you $100 to charge your web to build your website, anywhere to $5,000, and you'll hear all kinds of reasons as to why the price of a website build is what it is. But if I can give you a few general tips, here they are. Generally, there are two types of websites. There are websites that are static. In other words, basically the content is written, photographic, video, and the template of the website doesn't change too much. And that is the majority of club websites. And then the next type of website is dynamic, and it's where you may use the website to sell goods and services, and that involves putting in a shop and doing some really complex back-end stuff on the website, which really for most club websites you shouldn't have to go down that path, because you know most club websites aren't selling goods and services. So for a static website, you shouldn't really be paying more than $500 for anyone to build you a static website. So the total costs, if you're including someone to build your website for most club websites, shouldn't be more than, say, $600 in the first year. And then domain names last for 2 years, so you should only have to pay for them once every 2 years. And a hosting package is annually, so that's paid annually. Okay, so let me run through those costs again. Your domain name is probably around $20, and that's paid every 2 years. Your hosting package should only be around the $40 to $50 mark, and that's paid every year. And then if you're paying someone to build your website, you shouldn't really be paying more than $500 for that. Ideally, you'd have someone in the club that can do it, and most clubs these days would have amongst their membership population someone with the skill to build websites, because they're not, these days there are lots of programs, DIY programs, that allow you to build templates with very little knowledge. If you can write an email or write a Word document, then these days you can also use a program like Wix.com or Weebly.com, even WordPress.com to build your club's website. Okay. So, top 9 mistakes. The number one is we don't understand enough about the website. So, that leads to mistake number 2, which is we end up paying too much because we don't understand enough about what makes a club website, and therefore we're at the mercy of unscrupulous agents that will come into clubs and basically blow your head with jargon like, it's a very complex, dynamic, back-end, database-driven, all kinds of stuff that really is unimportant and it's just designed to make you feel like you need to pay for their services and pay a premium. So you don't need to. and be careful of unscrupulous operators that are charging you too much. Basically, as I mentioned before, you should be able to get a good, decent website for $600, having a third party build it. Otherwise, if you have someone in the club that can build it for you, you should only have to pay for domain name registration and hosting registration, which is probably about $70 up front. Okay, the number three mistake when it comes to websites at your sports club is that you don't plan, or the club doesn't plan the website, and it ends up just being a mishmash of information just thrown together, and it becomes hard to follow, and there's old stuff mixed in with new stuff, and it's just people don't read it because it's just all over the place. So before you get your website up and going, or even if you've got a website up and going that you're not quite happy with, sit down and think about how it should be laid out, and what do you want to tell the general public through your website. So do you need an about page where you tell the general public about your club? Do you need a page about all the teams at your club? Do you need a page about the history of your club? Do you need a page about who's on the committee and who to contact? Do you need a registration page? Sit down and think about the different pages that you need for your website, and then plan it out. Plan out what it's going to look like. Your home page where you want the logo and your club banner to sit, and sit down and think about it before you just go ahead and put something up that's not going to stand the test of time. Okay, number four in the top nine mistakes that we make with websites is that the website that we build doesn't work hard enough for the club. So there's no call to actions in the website itself. So when I talk about call to actions, I mean instructions that encourage people who visit the website to perform an action, whether it to be sign up for a newsletter or sign up as a new member or purchase tickets to an event or sign up for a fundraiser or as a volunteer at a fundraiser. So most of us don't have that on our websites. Most clubs don't have that on websites. Strong call to actions. We just have basically some information about the club and maybe some information about recent results. What we need to do is we need to have areas of our website where people can sign up for newsletters, where they can register to become a new member, where fundraisers are displayed and tickets can be bought. And all of this is on the website so people can do it while they're on the website, and the actual website is doing the work for the club. Okay, number five in the top nine mistakes that we make when it comes to club websites is the club website is never updated or rarely updated. Now, this is a real common one amongst sports clubs. And when you do talk to sports clubs, many of them will tell you, well, we don't have the people to update them. And there are circumstances where that is true. But most clubs have enough members where they can find a volunteer that can do some regular updating of the website. And it doesn't even have to be, you can even get your club members to update the website by themselves by sending pictures to your webmaster. So you can encourage your club membership to contribute to the updating of the website by encouraging them to send pictures and send scores and tell the club about certain personalities and build a reservoir of content that you can then, you know, keep refreshing the website with. Because to keep a website updated, you need to have a constant stream of content that you can use to put on the website. And that's a great way of doing that, by encouraging your club members to do it for you. So make sure that your club website doesn't remain static, because I have seen in my time club websites that start off at the start of the season with a whole raft of information on registering and what's coming up in the season and all this excitement around the club, and then there is no update until the end of the season when everyone's told that they need to bring the equipment back. So that's not what we want at our websites, because it doesn't encourage people to come and visit the website. Okay, number six in the top nine ways top nine mistakes that we make with our club websites is there's no variation in content. So for a lot of websites out there, there's either photos or written content. What we do want is we also want audio. So it's not that hard to do an audio interview with one of the players or one of the committee. You can do it on your phone. You can just record them and then upload it from your phone, and you can use that as content on your website. And there's also video. Video is a very powerful way to attract people to your website. It's proven that video is one of the strongest communication processes that we have on the internet. So encourage people around the club to make sure that that they take video and also photos, and also get people to do audio interviews and vary your content. So it's not just the written word, it's all different types of content that you're putting on your website. Of course, there comes certain legal obligations with that, so make sure that you're up to date with what legal obligations are around posting video and posting photos at your club. And you can find a lot of that information at playbytherules.net.au. That's a great resource for the legal obligations. But the main point is make sure you have a variation in content on your website. Okay, number seven in our top nine mistakes we make with our websites is that we have no privacy or terms and conditions displayed on the website. What I mean by this is down the bottom or somewhere in your website, you need to have a section that tells people what they can and cannot do on the website. So, you know, explain to them that you don't tolerate profanity or racism or any untoward behavior in any shape or fashion on the website, and that you need to tell people what you do with their information that they contribute to the website, and basically just let the people that visit your page know what the rules and regulations are about utilizing and using your current website. And that's just to protect yourself against anything that might happen which impugns the reputation of your club by the use of your website. Okay, so I did say it was top nine, but I think I might have given you top seven. But those top seven are pretty good. Once again, here they are in the ways or the mistakes that we make with our websites at our clubs. One is we don't understand the terminology. You know, what is a domain name, what is a posting, and all the other terminology that is around websites. By not understanding the terminology, we make mistake number two, which is we pay too much for the services. Mistake number three is we don't plan our website. So it becomes a mishmash and it's unorganized and people don't utilize it. Mistake number four is a website doesn't work hard enough for us. There's not enough call to actions like signing up for newsletters, signing up new members, selling tickets and so on. Mistake number five is that the website is not updated. Mistake number six is there's not much variation in content types, so we don't include audio and video. Mistake number seven is no privacy or terms and conditions displayed on the website. And let me add a latecomer for number eight, which is a lot of people don't link their social media to their website. So websites nowadays should have links to your Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, whatever other social media you are using at your club. There should be links displayed on your club website. Okay, so make sure you don't make those mistakes, and good luck with your websites at your sports club. Okay, we've come to that time where we must say goodbye, but you can get much more of Sports Community at our website at www.sportscommunity.com.au, where you can download previous podcasts, check out latest news in the world of grassroots sports, discover great resources for your club, including grants, take part in our great online training, and much, much more. So until next time, on behalf of me, Joe Novella,
and me, Steve Pallas, thank you for making us part of your sports community.